two circles. When elaborated, the previously summarized ideas yield two circles, an outer circle and an inner circle. Each circle has a center, or if you prefer, a heart. Each circle also has an entry point, a gateway leading from its outer structure to its interior, its heart. The outer circle is composed of the statement, "Muhammad is the messenger of Allah," which is part of the compounded testimony. The gate to this circle is Muhammad, through whom one enters its heart. The heart of this circle is the statement, "There is no deity but Allah," the other part of the compounded testimony. The inner circle is composed of the statement, "There is no deity but Allah," and its heart is Allah. Its gate is the deity, Al-Ilah. Thus, Muhammad is the gateway to the entirety of "There is no deity but Allah," while the deity is the gate to its essence. Between the whole statement and its essence lies a vast expanse, as vast as the difference between worship and servitude. It is an expanse where hearts soar with featherless wings in their infinite flight. This infinite flight is referenced in the verse, "And we sent down to you the reminder that you may make clear to the people what was sent down to them, so that they might reflect." Chapter 16, verse 44. The compounded testimony is not a testimony of monotheism, but rather a testimony of duplication. Duplication is the lowest form of plurality, lower than the station of monotheism. The journey from duplication to monotheism involves abstraction, which is the understanding of the station of Allah relative to that of Muhammad. Abstraction is only achieved by those who perfect imitation. Those who master imitation perceive the subtle meaning of the verse. And when Allah alone is mentioned, the hearts of those who do not believe in the hereafter shrink with aversion. But when those worshipped other than Him are mentioned, immediately they rejoice. Chapter 39, verse 45. Similarly, the singular testimony is not a testimony of monotheism either, unless individualization occurs. Individualization is the understanding of the station of the deity, Al-Ilah, relative to Allah. This knowledge is veiled and unattainable. It can only be glimpsed, but never fully realized. Those who achieve a high rank in individualization are granted insight into the verse. "Say, if the Most Merciful had a son, then I would be the first of his worshippers." Chapter 43, verse 81. The singular testimony is not considered monotheistic because it is based on both negation and affirmation. It represents a movement between two poles where thought traverses the straight path. In that fleeting moment of traversal, monotheism is realized. "For it is on the straight path that God is found." This is alluded to in the words of the prophet Hud. "Indeed, I have relied upon Allah, my Lord and your Lord. There is no creature but that He holds its forelock. Indeed, my Lord is on a straight path." Chapter 11, verse 56. The testimony of monotheism within individualization belongs solely to Allah. This is indicated in the verse, "Say Allah, then leave them to frolic in their vain discourse." Chapter 6, verse 91. Here the statement must be expressed through the tongue of being, where thought, speech, and action become unified. In this sense, "Say Allah" becomes akin to "Be Allah." Achieving this state of being is the function of the statement, "There is no deity but Allah," supported by righteous deeds, the highest of which is pure prayer. This is referenced in the verse, "To him ascends good speech, and righteous work uplifts it." Chapter 35, verse 10. Every person, no matter how elevated, has a deity other than Allah. That deity is their perception of Allah. No perception of Allah can encompass His supreme essence. Thus, a gap inevitably exists between perception and reality. All acts of worship aim to align the individual's perception with the reality of Allah so that their deity becomes Allah. And how distant this goal remains. This lofty aim is referenced in the verse, "And establish weight through justice, and do not make deficient the balance." Chapter 55, verse 9. It is as though one side of the scale holds Allah, the ultimate reality, while the other side holds the deity, our perception of Him. The idea of the deity begins with falsehood and progresses into truth. Truth seeks to align perfectly with reality. The deity, in another sense, is our perception of Allah, and this perception, no matter how refined, remains woefully inadequate. Even the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, said, "The most learned scholar, compared to Allah, is more ignorant than a camel." Practically speaking, every person's deity is their self. Since ourselves act as veils between our intellects and the ultimate reality, Allah, the infallible prophet, said, "Your greatest enemy is your own self, which lies between your sides." One of the mystics similarly said, "Your existence is a sin with no equal." This self is the lower self, also called the commanding self, al-nafs al-amara. It descends from the perfect self, a relative perfection represented by the perfect human. This, in turn, descends from the absolute perfect self, which is the self of Allah. The entire journey of worshippers is a struggle to ascend from the commanding self to the perfect self, to the self of Allah. This is an infinite journey with a beginning but no end. It is referenced in the verse, "Say, O mankind, the truth has come to you from your Lord." So whoever is guided is only guided for his self, and whoever goes astray only goes astray against it. And I am not a guardian over you. Chapter 10, verse 108. Whoever is guided guides themselves to their higher self, their perfect self. Conversely, whoever strays becomes lost in the mazes of their lower self. The path of Muhammad is the Sunnah. Initially, it is the Sunnah of Muhammad, but ultimately, it becomes the Sunnah of Allah. This Sunnah is the straight path, which extends vertically between the lower self at the base and the higher self at the summit. Horizontally, it is represented by the point of intersection between the extremes of excess and negligence, as the lower self, here referring especially to the reproaching self, though the commanding self is also present, oscillates between these two opposites. The point of intersection of these opposites, at this level, is the truth, al-haq, and the truth evolves as it seeks the ultimate reality, al-haqiqa. This prophetic sunnah is referenced in the verse, "The truth has come to you from your Lord." Chapter 10, verse 108. The spirit of this verse lies in its concluding statement, "And I am not a guardian over you." This concluding phrase is the essence of the verse, due to its profound significance and refinement. Refinement of the prophet and refinement of the individuals within the nation. It refines both the educator and the one being educated. Through it, the one being educated is made responsible for their actions as they journey toward achieving their individuality. At the same time, it imposes on the educator the duty of removing themselves from being in between the servants and their Lord, so as not to obstruct their path to God. This ensures that the educator perfects their own servitude, leaving no trace of lordship over any of creation. In this refinement lies a gentleness in guiding the human self, reaching a level that borders on the miraculous. Indeed, this is the true miracle of the Quran. This concluding phrase encapsulates, in miraculous brevity, the detailed meanings found in two well-known verses often discussed in our writings. So remind, you are only a reminder. You are not over them a controller. Chapter 88, verses 21 and 22. It is worth noting here that the concluding phrase represents the Sunnah of Allah, whereas, "Say, O mankind, the truth has come to you from your Lord," represents the Sunnah of the Prophet, and only those with true knowledge comprehend this distinction.